Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome to the season finale of Futures Focus, a podcast brought to you by Prospects 1500. We are all done with another season, the 2022 season. My name, Alex Sanchez, of course, David Gasper joining us here. What a run, huh? What a run we've had this year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how do you even begin to describe what we've gone through this year? I don't know.
It has been a roller coaster. Some guys doing as expected, some guys not. Yep. Julio Rodriguez doing Julio Rodriguez things. It's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Spencer Torkelson and guys like that all of a sudden not. So some ups, some downs, and some crazy moments along the way as always.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, this will be our last episode for the season. We're going to go ahead and go into hibernation mode, as does the baseball world after the World Series, which is, coming up here. We got the playoffs starting up in about a week. Your Brewers still technically in it, I guess.
Yeah, they're hanging around. They're trying not to be in it, but the Phillies are, it's like an I got it, you take it. I don't want it, you take it. I don't want it, you take it. I mean, neither of these two teams really seems to want that wild card spot.
Yeah, and it's that beloved third wild card spot. Awesome. But yeah, it's that trade. That trade will go down in infamy. I mean, we'll talk about that Brewers trade for it. We've talked about it on nauseam here for a while.
I know I certainly have.
Yeah, it's so easy to talk about. That's the crazy part. But alas, I'm here with my Braves and Mets with like a little mini playoff of sorts. As well, it's got that atmosphere. Just saw back-to-back home runs from Austin Riley and my MVP for 2022, Matt Olson. Of course, I'm referring to the predictions that you and I had here. I have those written down here. So we're going to actually go over the predictions that we made at the beginning of the season. And we're just going to chat it up and see where it takes us. Have some fun. It's the last episode. There's really nothing more to say. If you're not in the playoffs of your dynasty leagues, you're probably have stopped paying attention. You're listening to this podcast right now. I appreciate you in, October listening to this. It's been awesome. Good following. So you've probably listened to some other episodes. So again, thank you for all of that. But let's just have some fun, shall we, David? Let's talk about our predictions.
Let's do it.
Do you remember any of them?
Not a single one.
Well, of course, we predicted the division winners and World Series winners and all of that stuff. So some real baseball stuff here. We were pretty good. I mean, honestly, we weren't bad. I think our World Series picks are both definitely still in it, and I'll get to that in a second. But we were definitely dead wrong about the White Sox. You and I were both very much into the White Sox. We had them winning the Central. That is not the case. They kind of
no.
What happened to the White Sox? What happened to all the
three teams? Words: Tony La Russa.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. What do we think about the White Sox moving forward? I mean, the farm system's not going to be doing them any favors, but I still like a lot of their core, right? I mean, I feel like, is it all just Tony La Russa, or like, is this team in a lot? I mean, they're 77-79 right now. It's not that disaster.
I mean, they've also had injuries that have, been, struggles for them. And, that makes it tough. But, when you intentionally walk guys on 1-2 counts and do all these other things, it's hard to get any sort of momentum going at all with that.
I had the White Sox going to the World Series, so that was a bad call.
Yeah, that is. I don't think that one's going to happen.
Yeah, you had them going to the ALCS.
All right.
We were
not as bad.
We were really down on the Astros, who are the number one seed. We didn't have them making the playoffs at all. We had the Mariners, which we were pretty close about. We just severely underestimated the Astros. who have 102 wins and have locked up the division by 16 and a half games. So oopsies, but we were pretty good about the Seattle Mariners. And I actually listened back to our podcast. There was talk about how, you know, ESPN had them projected for like an 85 loss season. And we both thought that was pretty crazy. So pretty good with the Mariners. And although they didn't win the West, I call that a win. Definitely an L, not believing in the Astros just because they lost like Carlos Correa. I guess that really, we were just very
negative. Yeah, Jeremy Pena took over and did pretty well.
Yeah. And oh yeah, a guy named Justin Verlander came back.
Yeah, he's all right.
We didn't really, I guess, account for that.
I mean, but really, how could you anticipate, what is he, 39, 40? Yeah. How could you anticipate him coming back from his second Tommy John at that age and doing what he's doing?
To be honest, though, like, I think we talked about this earlier. Somebody was talking about this on air about how if you're young and have Tommy John surgery, that the chances of getting to the big leagues and being successful is quite scary. But when you're an established major league pitcher for years and years, coming back to your former self is pretty actually consistently great. I mean, John Smoltz is a great example of that. Justin Verlander, these guys getting it late in their careers.
Verlander is like an all-time talent too, just naturally. I mean, the things that he's been able to do in his career, I mean, maintaining his high velocity as a starter for so many years and so deep into his career, he's a freak of nature, yeah, essentially. I mean, that's what Justin Verlander has been his entire career. So, you know, the fact that he's doing this, you know, after Tommy John surgery at such a late age, for a playing career, that's, you know, it's not totally unbelievable, but it's still remarkable, and it's hard expect that even from someone as naturally talented as Verlander.
Yeah, and I guess my point is, yeah, you're absolutely right, he's extremely old, but I don't think, like, you know, 31-year-olds, 32-year-olds that have shown a big track record, like, let's say Gerrit Cole gets Tommy John surgery, right? We can expect him to come back to being Gerrit Cole. I think in my mind, I viewed it as a pretty high risk that he would never be back, but like, you're going to get back to yourself, and Gerrit Cole's normal self is excellent. So I think that's just kind of a lesson to remember, that don't let Tommy John scare you away from guys in Dynasty at the very least. Now, the East, you did much better in the East. I had the Red Sox winning the East. They're in last place right now.
Yeah, that didn't work.
No, but 75 and 81, just that division is tough. That division is tough. You had the Rays winning the division. They're sitting in third place. So yeah, we did not see the Yankees coming. We both thought that they got worse. But then Aaron Judge went ballistic, and they are 96-59. So you actually didn't have the Yankees making the playoffs. I did have them sneaking into the wild card. So win for me there after the big L, the Red Sox. Your wild card teams are the Angels, the Twins, and the Blue Jays.
Nope, and yes.
Yeah, Angels. Oof, goodness gracious. But the Blue Jays are a good call.
Yeah, I mean, the Angels it's almost comical how much they continue to fall apart. I mean, Shohei Ohtani nearly had a no-hitter the other day, and he's putting up stupid numbers, even better than last year, and still they can't go anywhere.
Yeah. I think I learned my lesson last year by not having them make the playoffs, that I'm going to make them make the playoffs before I ever predict them to like win a division or anything.
Yeah.
You cannot trust them.
No. It's like Georgetown in the NCAA tournament. I just cannot trust them anymore. Sure.
Interesting example, but yes, accurate.
Do you fill out brackets, Alex?
Sure, but I don't follow college basketball at all, and it tends to be an awful experience.
Yeah, one year I had Georgetown winning it all in my bracket. They were a 2 seed, and they lost in the first round to the 15 seed Florida Gulf Coast. Remember that?
Yes.
Ever since then, I have never picked them to win a single March Madness game ever again.
Yeah, and you're probably accurate that way, right? We have to let teams prove it to us.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Which is maybe why we shouldn't have picked the Mariners to overcome the Astros, right?
Yeah, maybe.
So anyway, long story short here, you had the Rays and the White Sox and the Rays going on to the World Series. I had the White Sox and the Blue Jays and the White Sox going on to the World Series. Our National League East was a little bit better. We did not have the Mets anywhere, and they're obviously right in the thick of things here. So we kind of had oversight there. We had the Braves winning the East, which I don't think is crazy. I mean, 97 and 59 for them certainly still can win the division. We did have both we both had the Brewers winning the division. So
yeah,
that
yeah,
did not happen. But
yeah,
you know, 83 and 73, just, you know what, the trade and the injuries, I guess, you know, just injuries that kept some of the key starters out for extended periods of time. And then Yelich still not going back to what we thought he could be. You know, there was hope at the beginning of the year, you know.
There was. And their rotation has taken a bit of a step back. And then they just completely massacred the chemistry of the team at the trade deadline. And, yeah, it's been a rough go the last 2 months or so in Brewers land over here. I'm not going to lie. They were right there. I mean, they had a 4-game lead heading into the trade deadline, and just that slipped away so fast.
I didn't realize that. That's astonishing. I mean, it's not, there's been obviously worse collapse than that, and they still could make the playoffs and win the World Series and it would all be fine, right?
Which is because the Phillies are collapsing.
Yeah, but that's not what you want to see as you head into the playoffs.
No.
Now we were obviously a little wrong on that one, as the Cardinals have clinched the Central. We were good about the Dodgers. We still believed in the Giants, and I don't know why I did that. I knew that they had overachieved. I should have just not believed in them in retrospect. But we had the Giants making the playoffs, the Padres making the playoffs, and then you had the Phillies making the playoffs. And I almost did, but I instead put the Cardinals in to make the playoffs. So I think if we combine our predictions, we did pretty well in the NL.
Yeah, wasn't bad.
And you have the Brewers going to the NLCS to face the Dodgers. And then you have the and I had the Dodgers going all the way to the World Series and winning it. And you have the Rays winning the World Series. So those are still in play.
Yeah.
Still in play. All right. MVPs, Cy Youngs, and Rookie of the Years. These aren't awful either. Let me pull up, you know, I mean, okay. So I had Matt Olson and Rafael Devers as MVP candidates. Yeah, they're not going to win, obviously, but
right.
Devers had a good year, and Olson's had a pretty decent year. You had Vladdy and Soto as your MVPs. And again, I don't think we're wrong on any of the – I think Soto is so interesting, what's happening to him.
Yeah.
And he even got traded. I guess it would be hard to win an MVP when you got traded, but strange year for him. I don't think those are L's too much. Judge obviously coming out of and going crazy, and then even in the NL, it's still like, I guess it's Yordan perhaps. There's no clear cut, just obvious MVP. So
I don't even know who would win MVP in the NL right now.
Yeah, I was looking. I mean, if you want it, I mean, Yordan's had a great year.
Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't he with the Astros?
Yeah, so we can't.
Astros haven't been in the National League for a decade, man.
You're right. Let's look it up then. MLB WAR. I know. That was. Remember, they were in the NL, so that's where my brain was at. Aaron, the Cardinals brothers over there, Arenado and Goldschmidt would be the two leading candidates, I'd imagine. But yeah, I mean, there's not a clear cut obvious. It's going to be one of those two. Probably Goldschmidt. Probably gets his MVP. 7.4 WAR. Hey, anyway, our Cy Youngs are pretty close too. I think that, you know, I had Walker Buehler and he got hurt. So that kind of sucks. He was not having a great year either. Cole, honestly, I mean, you could make an argument for Cole to win the Cy Young in the AL. It's not crazy. You had Robbie Ray and Corbin Burns.
Yeah.
Either will win the Cy Young, but.
No, Sandy, well. As we're recording this here, it is Corbin Burns versus Sandy Alcantara as the pitching matchup here tonight. So Yeah, that is a good one, but it's going to be Alcantara by a mile.
That one's an easy one. And then
Verlander.
In the AL, like Dylan Cease is probably the favorite, but you know the strikeouts that
Cole over Verlander.
I mean, I'm just looking at WAR right now. Dylan Cease has 6.5 WAR. Verlander has 5.5. So you could argue either one, and then I do think you could argue for Cole too, although he's much lower on that WAR list, but he's had like 250 Ks, so that's, you know, the voters might like that. Our rookie of the years, I think we both got it right, because I honestly don't. I guess it's going to Julio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Witt's right there too. I mean, Witt's come on really strong here at the end. In terms of WAR though, Witt isn't really providing a lot of like real life baseball value when you compare him to Mr. Rodriguez, who leads all rookies in WAR.
Yeah. Oh, and then plus you got Adley, Rutschman, who's, you know, right around there as well. But, you know, because he was hurt to begin the year, got a bit of a later start, maybe won't get as much recognition. But Adley's been good. Jeremy Pena has been really good for Houston. Yeah. Underrated. He's not going to win, but.
Yeah. You know what's crazy is that two things of these stats, and we're going to actually dive into these probably in more detail later on in the episode, but Adley has 33 doubles on the year, which is crazy because he only has, you know, 449 plate appearances, and he leads all rookies with doubles. And then Bobby Witt, who fantasy-wise, if you have him on your team, very happy, 20 home runs, 28 stolen bases, but WAR-wise, 1.2 WAR on the year. Awfully low. But still, fantastic rookie seasons for those two. Fantastic rookie seasons.
Yeah.
In the NL, much different. You had Hunter Green, and I had CJ Abrams. And those guys are not going to be winning, and we'll just leave it at that.
No.
Now, you were talking about how Hunter Green throws so hard.
Yes.
And you know who else throws hard that's a rookie that could win Rookie of the Year? You just got the name wrong. Spencer Strider, of course.
Ah, yes.
Definitely a candidate to win it. I'm not sure where the vote's going to go.
Could it go to Michael Harris?
Split Rookie of the Year?
Maybe.
They could do that.
You'd have to have the votes all, you know,
yeah,
coming in a tie. You can't just have all the writers decide, okay, it's these two guys, we're going to tie it.
Yeah, I could see it just like half of them voting for the pitcher and half of them going for, because there's really no, I mean, you can argue, I guess. I mean, there's nobody else. Rookie-wise.
O'Neill Cruz has been, you know, he's shown some cool moments, but
yeah, I mean,
he's hitting 234 with a sub 300 on base percentage.
Yeah, it's not even close. I mean, those two are taking it. So interesting. All right. Let's fly through these bold predictions. I had a bunch of bold predictions. I feel like I did really, really well with these bold predictions, and you can grade me and see what you think. The first one was not good, so start with that one. I had said Brian Rocchio would be up and play 100 games on the season. That did not happen, so that's an F. He's actually been a little bit lower than I would have hoped. But I did say Anthony Volpe would have a disappointing season, and he was doing that for a long, long time. But then he wasn't anymore.
All of a sudden, he figured it out.
Yeah, and, you know, 20 home runs, 50. He's going to have 48 stolen bases. It's pretty good. But not the average, though, 250. In double A, and that was after a very, very slow start, and then 229 in triple A to finish off the year. I don't know. I think it's people were thinking he was going to be up, you know, this year.
Yeah.
So I feel like I got that one pretty good. Still, I said he'd be a top 50, 60 prospect. And what do you think? Top five prospect?
Yeah, around there.
Definitely not in the 50s.
No.
I did say Michael Harris would be up by the mid-season mark, and said one of Adam Duvall, Marcelo Zuna or Eddie Rosario would fall on their face. And turns out all three of them have fallen on their face. So yeah, Harris got up very, very early, and obviously the rest is history. So that's an A+ win. I did say one of Bryson Stott or Jeremy Pena would be out of a job by May.
I believe that'd be Stott.
And that was Stott. And we both agreed that it was probably going to be Stott. And as Pena has been really good, although he struggled at the end of the year here, Pena's kind of final line's not going to look as good as he probably was for the majority of the year. And Stott actually has sort of figured things out. You take a look, like their stats aren't too far apart. Stott's going to end up with an ugly 225 batting average, but 9 home runs and 54 RBIs, 9 stolen bases. Certainly not the end of Bryson Stott, right? There's still a lot of stuff, but he did go back down to the minors. And so I clearly called that. And then when we take a look at Jeremy Pena, 249 batting average with 20 home runs, 11 stolen bases. So they're not as far apart as you might think. I think Pena passes the eye test a lot more, though, is the thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's been able to fill in pretty well in the absence of Correa and just kind of take over. And, you know, while it may not be putting up, you know, too ridiculous of numbers, it's still been solid overall. 20 doubles, 20 homers. You know, you'll take that.
Yeah, with great defense, too. I mean, we can't forget that part at a premium position. I also was not in very much on Jason Dominguez. I said he'd hit 220. Turns out Jason Dominguez is sort of ascending here. I think we're all kind of getting back on board the fact that he is a, you know, major league caliber player, the superstar that he was touted out to be, probably not, but still pretty darn good when you remember he's still only 19 years old. He's already up to AA to end out the year. Not eye-popping numbers, but certainly for a 19-year-old, pretty darn good. So I'll take the L on that.
Yeah, Jackson Churio reached it as an 18-year-old, but, you know, just saying.
Yeah, so, you know, that to say who would you rather have, I think everybody in the dynasty
Churio
world would say the same thing now, which, you know, a year ago you could never even imagine. So things change. I mentioned that Everson Pereira would be the minor league home run leader. Not true.
Nope.
Does end up with 14 plus 2 is 16 home runs. Not too bad. Actually don't have the minor league home run leader.
The minor league home run leader is, hold on a second, I have it right here. Moises Gomez.
Oh, yeah, the former Ray, former Cardinal.
39.
Yeah, they didn't call him up. He's a Cardinal now, right?
I believe I'm just pulling up Sam Dykstra's Twitter feed here. And it says Moises Gomez.
Gomez is a Cardinal, former Ray. So yeah, not bring him up. Pretty interesting. That's a bunch of home runs that you're not getting any major league value for. But they won the division, so I guess it's not too bad. So Everson Pereira, certainly not a great one. I had said Kevin Alcantara of the Cubs would be a top 10 consensus prospect. When we look at Kevin Alcantara, I feel like a lot of people are still sleeping on this guy. And when I had said that he'd be that high, you kind of gave me a sound that it was like, whoa, no way type of thing. But I'm not seeing Kevin Alcantara too high on lists, but 14 home runs, 15 stolen bases as a 19-year-old in A-ball. 269, 357 on base percentage.
Not bad.
No, not top prospect, but certainly somebody that passes the eye test much like Jeremy Pena does, and I think the results will follow soon. So definitely a buy low candidate for me. And just a few more here. Actually, let's switch over to some of yours, see how you think you did. You mentioned that Ethan Small, Garrett Mitchell, and Bryce Terang would all make their debuts this year.
2 out of 3 ain't bad, you know. I'm surprised that Terang is the one who hasn't made his debut yet. But they called up Mitchell. Small has gotten 2 cups of coffee. He's gotten 2 starts. They haven't gone particularly well, but he made his debut. But yeah, Terang is still hanging around in AAA, but he's going to be up next year. at the very least.
Hanging around. He got a 600 plate appearances at AAA. So
yeah. He's hitting a cool, like, what, 290?
Yeah, 286, 34 stolen bases, and 13 home runs. Certainly, if you're going to call up Garrett Mitchell, I don't see why you couldn't call up Terang either.
Two words, Willie Adames.
You can't find a spot for Terang?
I mean, they probably should. I mean, Colton Wong's been playing better as of late. I think they should find a spot for Terang, but there have been several questionable player personnel decisions made by the Brewers front office in the last 2 months or so. So, you know, it's hard to really kind of know what they're thinking or what they're doing.
Sure. And it's not like Terang was forcing the issue with those stats. So, yeah, like you said.
And his power came on late. I mean, he wasn't hitting for much power early on in the season, but starting in August and then in September, he really started hitting the home runs and tacking those on. So,
and now yeah, Garrett Mitchell was the one that you were probably the least confident about when you made that prediction, and yet he does make his debut. What have you thought about Mitchell so far? I know he's kind of turned it on lately, had a big, you know, kind of a struggle there, up to 286 in the time. You probably see more of him than any of us listening. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, he's as electric as advertised, man. I mean, his speed, his ability to beat out infield hits and take the extra base and steal bases and things like that in his defense and center field. I mean, it definitely passes the eye test there. He's struggling a little bit with strikeouts early on here. But I think, you know, I think he probably should have had a little bit more time in AAA to work on that. But, you know, he's come up and he's been able to perform. And that's, you know, that's certainly been good to see, especially going into next year. They'll give him a leg up on securing a job and getting this experience now so we can figure out that strikeout problem heading into next year.
Now, your other prediction, I would definitely give you a win for that because, you know, Terang should have been up in a lot of scenarios. And the one that you were really right about was Garrett Mitchell. But your other one, you did say Julio Rodriguez would struggle in his
initially.
Initially.
Yes, and
did you
really
mean like for a couple of games then, or the, because that's about all he struggled.
I mean, he struggled through the first month. At the end of April, he was hitting 205, 284, 260 with a 544 OPS. I would count that as struggling for Julio Rodriguez.
Okay.
So he struggled initially.
That you would, you kind of meant the whole year. That's how I took it.
Well, I'm taking it now as he was struggling the first month.
Now, do you remember this when he was getting called third strikes on like this egregious pace? And
the same thing's been happening to Garrett Mitchell too, to be honest.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, but, I feel like it's just something for rookies that umpires have. But yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, he struggled initially that first month and then turned it on afterwards. And he's been just fine ever since.
And we can go ahead and close the book on his stats. He's not done for the end of the year. We'll see him in the playoffs. But in terms of the regular season stats, he's going to finish with 27 home runs and 25 stolen bases, doing things that only like Mike Trout and the like do at that age.
Yeah, not bad.
And Michael Harris. And a 280 on average with a 342 on base percentage with that initial struggle that swiftly ran away. So I'll give you it then. If you meant just the first month, you were dead on. Because all the prospects really struggled at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Nobody came out of the guns blazing except Michael Harris.
Of course.
couple other ones here. These ones I feel like are big wins. We both kind of had this one where we said we had the big four, right? We had Torkelson, we had Julio, Bobby Witt, and Natalie Rutschman. We said most likely one of them would struggle immensely and like get a shock to the system, and one would kind of be an MVP level type of candidate. I would say Julio's an MVP level type of candidate with over 5 WAR. That is a win. And Torkelson has been horrific, and he was the one of the four that did not make it this year.
Yeah, it's been a rough go for Torkelson to get his career started.
Yeah. Now, he did get the call back up, and he's looked a lot better. So buy low on Torkelson. What do you think?
I mean, I'll still believe in Torkelson long term. I don't think he's going to be this bad, you know, going forward. I mean, I think he's still got a good enough ability to hit there. So I'm still holding him. You know, buy low if someone's looking to sell low. But yeah, I think that talent's still there.
Yeah, he got as low as 178 with that batting average, and up to 201. So yeah, that's ugly, but where he was at, certainly encouraging going forward. And he's going to get every chance. He's not going to be like, okay, well, that's it now. You're done. We're moving on, right? The Tigers need him to be good. So certainly do not give up on Torkelson. And then this is the kind of my favorite one. I saved it here last for everything. It was Corbin Carroll will have more combined war than Alec Thomas, Geraldo Perdomo, and Seth Beer. So do you think I got that one right? Just off the top of your head?
No.
Calculations? No, but it's really close. Okay, so Alec Thomas has a 1.5 war right now. Geraldo Perdomo, who sucks hitting-wise, actually provides a lot of value on defense and ended up getting 0.6 war. And the one that made this close was Seth Beer, who had negative 0.9 war.
Yikes.
So thanks, Seth. And then Corbin Carroll's up to 0.7 war. So it's 1.2 combined for those three to 0.7 for Corbin Carroll with, what, 5 or 6 games left. Pretty close.
No.
And now I was surprised how long it took them to call up Carroll.
Yeah, all about that that service time.
Perhaps. Also, which is a great segue, because I'm sort of done with the predictions part of this episode, and we'll take a break here and we'll move back. But the segue is that we had some surprises that we need to talk about. One of those being probably the reason why Carroll didn't get called up right away. That's Jake McCarthy, who's been fantastic. We'll talk about guys like him moving forward, guys that were not on our radar, that were not on top 100 list, that we are a dynasty podcast, you know, through and through. So we do got to kind of mention those guys and what we do with them moving forward. How do we value them? And then talk about the guys that did struggle, like the Torkelsons of the world. And there's some other big names, too, that are at the bottom of the war list that might surprise you. And you'll have to find out who those are right after this.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We're back. Futures Focus here with you. Alex Sanchez, David Gasper joining me. We have the WAR rookie leaderboard. And I think this is really important because, you know, at this point, prospects are kind of cementing their spot in top 100 lists. You're going to see, you know, not much movement here. Really, the only thing that can change a prospect's hype in terms of the list that you'll see are a strong fall league performance, which certainly should be taken into some account. And also, if there's moves in the offseason that open up playing time for guys that we normally wouldn't have expected. But let's go ahead and talk about this rookie WAR leaderboard. And there's some names on here you're going to recognize. We already mentioned a lot of them, like the Julio Rodriguez leads all rookies with a 5.7 WAR. We talked about Adley and Jeremy Pena. I think we mentioned Michael Harris a few times as well. These guys are just huge dynasty assets, right? Let's go ahead and kind of rank these names that we really liked at the beginning if we're doing a startup dynasty draft, all right? So startup dynasty draft, don't worry about other guys besides the names I mentioned. All right, David, you got Julio Rodriguez there. You have Michael Harris there. You have Adley Rutschman there. And you have Bobby Witt there. Who are you taking and why?
Julio, because Julio. I mean, just look at what the dude's done. Already an all-star, hitting 280. Just the power, the speed, the extra base ability. It's just such a dynamic combination that can get you a whole bunch of points in a whole bunch of categories. However you gain points, whatever type of league you're in, Julio is going to be a stud in it. Give me Julio.
Okay, I think everybody would probably get on board with that. I think it gets interesting, though, the next pick. If you had, let's say, Julio's off the board, and you have Michael Harris, Adley Rutschman, and Bobby Witt staring at you. Is that a little bit harder, or is that still pretty easy for you?
Ooh. I mean, it's a little bit harder, yes. Man, that's, I mean, I've still been, you know, really for a long time now. And I know I differ from you on our opinions of catchers, but I'm a big Adley guy, big Adley Rutschman guy, you know, just his ability as a switch hitter, switch hitting catcher with, the combination to hit for power and hit for average. Plus a positional scarcity, you know, just what he brings, to the table there. Like I'm definitely a big Adley guy.
Yeah. And I'll have to admit that the catching position, I got to open up to it in terms of guys that are the faces of their franchise and also playing catcher with the DH now, you know, if JT Realmuto had the DH a few years ago, you know, he's such a step above everybody else. It gives you that huge advantage. And with Adley now, like, seemingly the obvious number one catcher moving forward, which you might be able to get at a decent rate next year in redraft leagues when you see a 254 average and only 13 home runs. But realize 33 doubles, 359 on base percentage, switch hitter, only going to get better. Sky's the limit. However, I still... I'm taking Michael Harris ahead of Adley if I was drafting. I might even take Bobby Witt ahead of Adley, too. They're all great, obviously, but...
Can't go wrong either way, really.
No, I mean, what a nice, nice group. But after that, there's some interesting names floating around that don't seem to belong if we were to go back in time a couple of months. Stephen Kwan is one that's very interesting. 5.5 WAR. The home runs obviously are never going to be there, but 19 stolen bases and a category that is kind of difficult to predict, but I feel very confident in thinking that Kwan's going to score a lot of runs. And that's not a category you really think about too much because it kind of takes care of itself. But Kwan's going to be a guy that you can get for a reasonable price and he's going to score a ton of runs. 87 runs on the year, 376 on base percentage. What are your thoughts about Kwan going forward in terms of these other names? You know, is he a guy that you're just going to one-hit wonder type of thing, or are you getting sustainable vibes with him?
No, I think his hitting ability is sustainable. I mean, I remember when he first exploded onto the scene at the beginning of the season and how, you know, he was just, you know, hitting and such an incredibly high average. It's like, oh, he's going to fall back down. And, you know, he did for a little bit, but he's been able to bounce back and maintain that 300 average over the course of a whole season. So, I mean, he's someone with just his pure hitting ability. I mean, he walks more than he strikes out. You don't see that very often. He's only got 56 strikeouts and 616 plate appearances. Think about that. You don't see that very often. You don't see such a low strikeout rate in today's game. So for him, the way he puts contact on the ball, I mean, I think it can be something like Luis Arraez, where he's just battling for batting championships, you know, batting titles every single year going forward. I think he'd be that kind of guy. Is he gonna bring the home run pop? Probably not. But a leadoff hitter that hits a lot, that gets on base, that can steal bases, score runs, that has plenty of value.
Yeah, Michael Brantley with a little bit more speed. You know, that's a very good fantasy asset that you don't have to worry about. And that's nice to have at you know, he's 24 years old. Now, when you mentioned strikeout versus walk ratio, as a rookie, I feel like that's a very, very good barometer. And there is some that are concerning. We could talk about the ones that are concerning, but the ones that are very healthy, Vinny Pascantino, 33 strikeouts to 32 walks. That's a really good ratio too. And now you're getting power involved as well. And remember, he kind of came up and struggled initially too with the counting stats, but up to 284 now with 9 home runs, 24 RBIs. This is a really, really good hitter that you can't forget about. And if playing a full season, you extrapolate those numbers, you're getting a really consistent production from a very, very young player at 24 years old. Another one that's is very encouraging, which one was it? Was Gunnar Henderson, actually, too. We can't forget about him, a very highly ranked prospect, 26 strikeouts to 12 walks, pretty not as great of a ratio as what we were talking about. But what do you think about Vinny Pascantino, Gunnar Henderson going forward? What do you think they're capable of doing in a full season next year for you?
Yeah, I'm really excited for Gunnar Henderson there in Baltimore. And, you know, I think the Orioles are going to be building quite the team there with a full season next year of Adley and Gunnar. And then they're going to have Grayrod coming up at some point here and dominating that rotation. So I really like what Gunnar's done. I think he's the only one ranked above Jackson Churio on Baseball America's list. And he won Baseball America's Prospect of the Year award. So that says quite a bit about his ability, his future. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Gunnar Henderson. You know, I think he's going to be a great guy to have going forward.
Now, some of these other names, these are names you've heard of before, especially if you're listening to this podcast. There's some other names that before the season, you would be very surprised to see. Jake McCarthy from the Arizona Diamondbacks, one of the fastest guys sprint speed-wise in Major League Baseball, 24 stolen bases, 10 home runs, 275 with a 346 on-base percentage. Certainly somebody that's going to get an extended look next year. And that speed's not going anywhere at his age. It's only going to be better. Really, really like Jake McCarthy. That outfield's going to be electric if you can get Thomas, Carroll, and McCarthy out there. What an outfield for Arizona. And another guy that I know you don't want to talk about him as a Cardinal, but Brendan Donovan, I think we need to discuss as well, because he came out of nowhere, only 25 years old. The power, not extremely great at 5 home runs on the year, but again, a healthy 69 strikeouts to 58 walks, 280, almost a 400 on base percentage. And you got some of that Cardinals devil magic in there, which you can talk about a little bit. So two guys that really do surprise. And a third guy I'll throw in here as well. It's Oscar Gonzalez for the Guardians at 11 home runs, 287, no stolen bases here. And the on base percentage is not healthy like these other guys we've been mentioning. But of those three, who are you the most confident in sort of repeating, and who are you fading as a guy that, yeah, I don't see this continuing forward? That's, by the way, Brendan Donovan, Jake McCarthy, Oscar Gonzalez.
I'm going to go with Donovan just because, as you mentioned, the Cardinal devil magic, they just always kind of seem to churn guys out of nowhere. And, you know, even though he's only got the 5 homers, he does have 20 doubles. So he does have, you know, some power, some extra base hit ability. And again, that strikeout to walk ratio, 58 walks, 69 strikeouts. So he's putting the ball in play, making contact. So, you know, I think for him that's going to be a big sign going forward. And, you know, eventually I think some more of those doubles will turn into homers as he gets older and matures and the devil magic really starts to sink in. But Donovan is a guy that I'm looking at to really repeat there.
I actually believe in all three of these guys, unless Donovan gets traded from the Cardinals to another team, in which team, I would drop him immediately because he'll become Colby Rasmus at that point. Otherwise, if he stays on the Cardinals, I agree with you. I think that plate discipline and those approach skills that he shows, those are, you know, 28, 29, 30-year-old type of skills, which to get as a 25-year-old do bode well for the future. Don't sleep on Jake McCarthy. Oscar Gonzalez, you know, is the guy that I feel like you're going to get what you get from him, and it's going to be good, but it's never going to be next level. Riley Green, we should probably mention as well, had a 350 plate appearances, so we got to see a good look from him. Power didn't show up this year with 5 home runs, 254 on base percentage, 1 stolen base, slightly disappointing with Riley Green. Moving forward, you know, give me what you feel about, you know, Riley Green versus Michael Harris, Riley Green versus Bobby Witt, because at the beginning of the year, you were taking Riley Green over all of those guys, well, besides maybe Bobby Witt. But even then, you were thinking about it, I'd imagine. And you as the collective you, not necessarily you, David. But now, as a with the season under belt, what do you think about Riley Green?
I mean, I still like him. You know, I think there's just kind of been that weird thing with Detroit this year. You know, I think perhaps going into next year, like I'm still gonna hold on Riley Green. I mean, I think next year with the new GM, the new front office, Scott Harris, now the GM or president of baseball operations in Detroit, I think they're gonna overhaul that development system and maybe that, you know, coaching a little bit, because I mean, really for the Tigers for a number of years, a lot of their prospects have fizzled out because they haven't really been able to develop them properly. So we've seen the issues with Green and Torque, you know, not really reaching their full potential and reaching the height that they had. So, and really with all of their pitchers over the past however many years. So, you know, I think with that new group in there, I think they'll be able to make some changes to Riley Green and help develop them and make sure that power shows up and the average ticks up and everything else. So I'm still believing in Riley there. I'm not sure if I'm taking him, you know, who I'm taking him over at all, but I'm still a believer in Green.
What about Gunnar Henderson or Riley Green? Let's give you that.
Right now, probably Henderson.
Okay. Yeah, I think I agree. I'm a little bit down on Riley. I was a little late to the party with Riley Green, and then I'm not going to like pretend that I was completely right in seeing this struggle. I did go all in on him. I felt like I saw enough to say, okay, this guy's going to be a superstar. So the jury's still out on that, but I think you make some great points is that we can maybe throw away a lot of the stuff that happens here in Detroit and give them a fresh look next year. All right, let's move on over to the pitchers. The pitchers are interesting because there's some big names here. We got Nick Lodolo, we got Hunter Green, and then we have some names that sort of come out of seemingly nowhere with Spencer Strider. And then if we, you know, go down the line a little bit, we have like Dylan Coleman and, you know, Reed Detmers was a name that was pretty good too. So I want to kind of go over these guys and see who you're confident in going forward. Let's just get this. I just want to see what you think about Spencer Strider. Would you take him over any of those names I mentioned in a dynasty league startup right now?
Oh,
you have to think. Okay. I don't even have to think, but that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think at this point you got to go with Spencer Strider.
Yeah. We're looking at now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but the things that he's doing are generational types of things. He is literally the fastest pitcher to 200 strikeouts as a rookie, which is, you know, that's a generational type of thing. Now, the day and age we live in, the fact that you throw hard, the injury risk, all of that sort of stuff. But when you strike out 202 batters in 134 innings as a 23-year-old, you got to jump on that. You know, if he's available and those other names are available, you just have to because the upside's too great. The downside, sure. But if we're talking pitchers, they all have downside, right?
Yeah, they all have that injury risk. But
yeah. But yeah, it's an incredible season for Spencer Strider, and I've seen a lot of his games. It's almost must-see television for me as a Braves fan. I mean, every game you try to watch, of course. But when you see, oh, Strider's tonight, I'm definitely like adjusting my plans to watch him. It was an incredible run for him. But let's talk about the other guys. Nick Lodolo, also very impressive. 126 strikeouts in 98 innings, certainly nothing to go by. I forgot to mention Joe Ryan as a name that was a very, very decent rookie year here. 173 strikeouts with 167 innings pitched. You had Hunter Green, the ERA is high, but, you know, passes the eye test. Certainly the strikeouts are there, 156 over 119, a lot of up and downs with Hunter Green. George Kirby is another guy that has looked really, really solid. Strikeout, not quite what you'd expect it or hoped it to be, I guess is a better way of saying it, with 128 over 126 innings. Certainly not bad, but not nearly as high as some of those other totals we were mentioning. So we'll go ahead and put Strider in a category of his own. But now it gets a lot more interesting, right? So that's Nick Lodolo, Joe Ryan, Hunter Green, and George Kirby moving forward. If you want to give me like maybe your top two out of those names, what do you think there?
Oh, man, my brain is in a fog, dude. I can I don't know.
I can repeat the names for you. Let's just go one by one. Yeah. Then. We'll do a. They're all equal, and I think that's why I broke you there for a second. Nick Lodolo or Hunter Green? Let's just stay with the Reds. Who do you?
Lodolo.
Lodolo. I think I agree. I love the arm with Hunter Green, but I think Lodolo knows how to pitch a little bit better. What about Lodolo or Kirby?
Kirby.
I agree. I think Kirby is a little bit of a more consistent pitcher moving forward on a better team. Lodolo's got to get some talent on that Reds, and it's coming for sure. But man, and then Joe Ryan. What about Joe Ryan? Or I would assume you'd take Kirby over Ryan. Is that accurate?
Yeah, Kirby.
What about, is Ryan last then? Would you do Ryan or Hunter Green?
Probably Green.
I might do Joe Ryan. I like that. Interesting. They're all really, really close together. And then the rookie pitchers are just so crazy, right? Like Bryce Elder here for the Braves at, you know, 1.2 WAR with a 2.76 ERA. He just had a complete game shutout the other day. Like, okay, Bryce Elder, thanks. Thanks for coming. Then we have, you know, an old favorite, Edward Cabrera. He came back and started 20 games this year. I'm just reading that right now. I did not realize he
you know who didn't come back and start 20 games? Sixto Sanchez.
Sixto. I don't know what to do with Sixto.
Yeah.
I think you give up on him, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think you have to at this point.
I mean,
I think he just underwent shoulder surgery or something too.
Yeah. Brock Burke in Texas. 2.2 WAR. Now he didn't do a lot of starting, only six games started. They kind of put him into the bullpen, but man, that he got some sneaky good ratios for you if you kind of just threw him in there. Reed Detmers, we sort of mentioned, obviously had some highs with a no hitter and some lows with, you know, with this 4.39 ERA. The strikeouts though with Reed, I thought, you know, when we were talking about Reed Detmers, we were getting a guy that was going to strike out a ton, but 132 strikeouts in 143 innings. So I don't know what to make of these rookie pitchers. It's all very, very fascinating to me. And I think it just goes to show you that nobody knows.
Yeah.
Take Spencer Strider and hope that he continues to be Spencer Strider and those types of guys. It's tough to be a rookie pitcher too. Like we have to remember that most of the time, those are the numbers we're going to get. We're not going to get Spencer Striders very often. We'll get more rookie hitters that explode onto the scene, like your Mikey Harris's, your Jake McCarthy's, and Stephen Kwan's that just come up and see success, but the pitchers, not so much. All right. O'Neill Cruz. Let's talk about him as we finish up here, because I want to see what your thoughts are on him, because there are some red flags. As who just hit a homer for us? Is that Dansby? No. Yeah, Dansby. Good job, Dansby. Anyway, O'Neill Cruz, great things, and also horrific things. And the great things are the legendary batted ball info that we get and how hard he hits the things that are called balls. That was a weird sentence. And also the
exit velocity.
124 strikeouts. That's almost half. So what do you think about O'Neill Cruz going for? Are you a believer or are you a doubter?
Every time I watch him, he's a stud. Like, if you look at his numbers, he is the new Brewers killer. Like, his numbers against everyone else in the league are atrocious. His numbers against the Brewers, he's an MVP candidate. So my opinion of him is that this dude is incredible. But yeah, when you look at the other numbers, there are obviously some red flags, but whenever he faces the Brewers, he's a stud. So, if you want to, you know, kind of stick him on your bench, but when you see he's playing the Brewers, You put him in that lineup. You start him every single time.
That's the inside information that.
Yes. We can't get anywhere else.
Yeah. No, because we the Braves have plenty of those too. Like Jeff McNeil.
Every team has a couple of guys like that where they just have your number. The Pirates have always had one guy like that, whether it's Colin Moran or whoever else, like some guys who just suck against everyone else, and they're just so good against you. And O'Neill Cruz is the new Pirates Brewers killer.
He is a killer, too, when he gets going. I'm going to admit. Now,
he murders baseballs, literally.
He did. Yeah, yeah. He is a buy for me. Like, do not. He's the real deal for me. And here's why. Unless you're in a points league where strikeouts are really going to harm you, who cares? You know, the average and the on-base percentage are not going to sink you. They're certainly not good. I mean, the on-base percentage, he definitely takes a hit in those types of leagues. But if you're still playing in batting average leagues, for all the stuff you're going to get, because he also had 9 stolen bases and he's like super fast. I expect those to be up into the 20s, if not the 30s next year. We could see this guy hit 50 home runs. Like next year. Like imagine 50-20 or even 50-30. Who cares what he's hitting? If those are his only hits and his other hits are him getting on first and then stealing second.
You'll take it.
I'll take it all day. That's stuff that wins you fantasy leagues. And 2.1 WAR on the year. So definitely I think O'Neill Cruz is a fantastic guy going forward. Let's do one more with, would you rather have O'Neill Cruz or Bobby Witt?
Bobby Witt.
It's not close for you, huh?
Not really.
I think it would be close for some people out there. And, you know,
if O'Neill Cruz had 162 games of playing the Brewers, I'd take O'Neill Cruz. Absolutely.
Now, he's going to end up with almost twice the WAR as Bobby Witt in half the games. What do you think about that, knowing that fact?
Yeah, I mean, but still long term, I'm still sticking with Witt.
Yeah. I think you could maybe get Bobby Witt by somebody if you're like really good friends and you like sort of drop in that nugget that he had a 1.2 WAR and like then you get your friend really drunk and then you offer him a trade. And you're, oh yeah, Bobby Witt sucks. So you could use that.
Is that because of his defense though?
He's made some great plays at defense, but we could take a look at it.
He's hitting .256. He's got a sub .300 on base percentage.
Yeah,
it is. 31 doubles, 6 triples, 20 homers, 28 stolen bases.
Yeah, one negative 1.4 for defense. So 3.4 on WAR for the offense.
Yeah, so I'm still taking
good call. Yeah, I think I am too. Oh, man, it would be so fun to have O'Neill Cruz reaches. Because if they both
why
reach
not both?
Absolute season, yeah. Yeah, go ahead and get both. If they could if they could reach their like 100 or 99th percentile ceiling, then O'Neill Cruz wins, I think.
Yeah.
Let me see what O'Neill Cruz has defensively with WAR and see if we can adjust that too. Defensively, he's actually been 0.5, so he's adding some value defensively. That cannon of an arm makes sense too.
Yeah. So 1.6 offensive WAR and 3.4 for Bobby.
Yeah. But don't forget half the games too. So if we extrapolate that.
True. Yeah.
It's interesting. It's an interesting argument and a debate to have. I certainly agree that I believe in Bobby Witt. Like if I was a betting man, you said, hey, Alex, bet your life on this. I would take Bobby Witt. But if you're like, I got nothing to lose. What's that going on? Your house money. I might take O'Neill Cruz, but depends how you are as a fantasy player. Are you a risk taker? Or are you safe play? What about you, Dave? What do you think?
I'm probably more of a safe play.
Yeah. Prospect-wise, I'll take the risks, but these are picks that you're going to have to invest very high capital on, right? If you're starting up a dynasty league or you're creating trades, and in that case, the risk definitely gets a little bit more scary because if you're wrong, you set your team back a lot. If you're right on like that 88th pick you have in your draft because you went huge upside, you're doing fine. Which, by the way, I'm in the championship for our Zhao dynasty. So, went from the worst to first. I had the first overall pick. Remember? Now I'm in the
championship. Very nice.
Yeah. Those prospects paid off. They're all coming up. I don't know what to do with them. I have like JJ Bleday and Vinny Pascantino and all these Riley Green just like on the bench. I don't know what to do with him. Actually, I traded Riley Green for Austin Riley.
Oh, wow.
Obviously more.
Riley for Riley.
No. Yeah, you're right. I obviously gave up more than Riley Green. But, yeah. So, I like Austin Riley. He's not bad. All right. I think that's going to do it. Finale. We did it. Another year in the books. I think this is like our official second year of doing this podcast.
Yeah, I think so. For you and me.
Congratulations, buddy. It's been a blast.
Yeah, and hey, congratulations on the next kid on the way.
Oh, sure.
Big stuff.
Yeah. I don't think I've actually even mentioned that on the podcast, but yeah, my wife and I are expecting our second child any day now. That's kind of the reason why this is the finale, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm going to be busy for the next couple of months, and by busy, I mean not sleeping.
Yes.
And then I don't think you want to hear me talk because I already don't make much sense a lot of the time. I think, David, you'll agree with that.
And but neither do I.
Imagine if I was lack of sleep and then trying to do these things. And then there's nothing really to talk about in the off season. I don't think that's content a lot of people want to hear.
No.
So this is the finale. Cue the fireworks, cue the champagne, cue everything. But I do want to say thank you, number one, David, for being here with me for the majority of our episodes. You've been a great co-host. I'm hoping that, you know, we continue to do this in the future. So my thanks to you. My thanks to Scott Green as well for allowing us to do this kind of almost free range. He lets us do what we want to do most of the time. And thanks to all the special guests that have been on. But most importantly, thank you to the listeners, everybody supporting the podcast, supporting Prospects 1500. It makes it worth it because doing a podcast where there's only 50 people listening, it makes it hard to muster the energy to do this. But with our listenership going up, we've reached really high levels in terms of what I, you know, when we started out in this podcast. And so we get, you know, we see that data and stuff like that. So it does make it worth it. And again, thank you for turning in. And especially if you managed to get through the end of this entire episode, thank you so much. We will be back probably before, opening day. I'd imagine spring training will get the itch to come back and get those rankings will be out, all sorts of some fun stuff. So, David, anything to say to the crew here? As we sign off for 2022.
Enjoy the postseason. Enjoy the Arizona Fall League and everything we got coming up. So it's going to be nice, fun, non-lockout filled offseason this year, which is incredibly exciting that we're not going to be locked out by Rob Manfred once again. So stay positive and... Yeah, and enjoy your lack of sleep enjoy your sleep now while you can.
I've got to stock up. I totally forgot about the lockout. Yeah, we went through that. Yeah. It's like, you know, pandemic.
How did we ever survive? I honestly don't know.
And we have rule changes coming too.
Oh yeah.
We got rule changes coming. So we'll talk about all those new rule changes when we get going next year. Certainly going to make some adjustments, I think, in how the game's played. I'm interested.
No.
I'm a fan of most of them, to be honest. Don't hate any of them. I'll just say that. That's a better way of saying it. I hear by your sigh that you might hate some of them.
If Rob Manfred likes them, I automatically dislike them.
I will say this. If you're not into the robo umps, which are you into robo umps?
You know, on some days I am when I watch these guys umpire. Whenever I watch Angel Hernandez behind the plate, I am all in favor of robo umps.
Yeah. So one of the leagues was experimenting with the challenges, right? So the pitcher or the catcher could challenge a call up to like three times in a game or whatever. So like in a big spot, you didn't get the call and you're sure it's a strike. You just like do this little signal where you challenge it. I thought that was a really good idea. It's a nice compromise for me where you still keep your umpires and you still have that like the variability throughout the game. But in an important call and you think you got it and you can challenge it and reverse the call. I really like that.
Yeah. That should be if they can bring that in to Major League Baseball, I think that would be good.
Yeah. So we shall see if it turns into the robo or like a hybrid sort of thing like that. So interesting. A lot of exciting things to come on both the major league level and the minor league level. So again, thank you to everybody. This is the Futures Focus podcast. David Gasper, Alex Sanchez, Again, signing off for the 2022 season. See you later. See you next year.